Don't forget to visit marketingcasts.com to find even more custom curated marketing podcasts just like this one. That's marketingcasts.com.
Hi, this is Sean Halter, host of the CMO Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and catch up on all the previous episodes at www.thecmosuite.com.
This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconnex. Uconnex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconnex. Visit them today at uconnex.com and No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. Visit them at nokidhungry.org.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. Winmo tracks every national advertiser, their agency relationships, and key executives within each organization. Get instant media spend, competitor tracking, and industry trend analysis in one easy-to-use application that integrates with all major CRM platforms. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.
Finally, the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You are listening to the CMO Suite. I'm your host, Sean Halter. As a reminder, the CMO Suite is brought to you in part by Uconnex. Uconnex provides biddable media solutions for brands and agencies across the U.S. and Canada. For more information, visit them at uconnex.com. This is it, you guys. This is the end of season 5. It was our craziest season. We recorded everything at home this season. We've never really done that. We built a studio for this, and we're ending it strong. We're ending it with Stephanie McCarty. Stephanie is the Chief Marketing and Communication Officer at Taylor Morrison. Stephanie, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me.
We're recording this on Memorial Day. It's going to air next week. The funny thing about recording at home is, you know, back in season 1 and season 2 and season 3 and season 4, all the guests came in. They came into either New York or Los Angeles or wherever we were. Since we're doing all this at home, the craziest thing, this is the first time this happened. We actually tried to record this last week and all of our internet went down. It was the craziest thing. So we're back. We're both working on Memorial Day, Stephanie, while everybody else is probably out enjoying a barbecue or some sun or something.
We're committed.
We are committed. We are committed to the show. So thank you again for joining us. And I was excited to talk to you. Obviously, the home industry is ridiculous right now. And so that probably makes things even more interesting for you. I definitely want to talk a lot about your time at Taylor Morrison. And I'd love to, of course, obviously dig into what it was like pre-COVID, then during COVID, and then post-COVID. It seems as if during all of this, especially right now, there maybe something came out of this where people just felt like, now is the time for me to make a change. Now is the time for me to invest in myself or where I'm living. Do you think a lot of that came from COVID and just the fact that people were home and then kind of making a decision to invest in themselves?
Yeah, I think, Sean, what COVID did was make us all look at our homes differently, right? Home became not only just your place of sanctuary and your place of escape, it became your classroom, it became your workspace, it became, you know, your means to an end. So while you're stuck in your house, you have the time to look around and see what's not meeting those needs from your prior life, and what's certainly not meeting the needs of having to exist in this space longer. So I think this notion of home obsession is the phrase that we've heard a lot of economists talk about, that they're saying won't last forever, but it did drive this sense of, I either need more space, my current space is inadequate, or I need an entirely new object and space to look at, which drove this increased demand for housing. I think you couple that with just strong economics, crazy low interest rates, and a very, very low supply, and you have this perfect storm that we've been trying to navigate for the better part of the last year. I'll tell you something that's funny, Sean. I've been in the chief marketing officer role now for 3 years, and I work with the most intelligent, seasoned operators. They get the industry, they've been doing it for decades. And marketing in and of itself, even though the industry, new home construction, has been around forever, this notion of marketing or PR or any kind of brand awareness is still, I would say, in its infancy within the industry, because they've so long operated under this, you know, notion of if you buy the right land and you put the right product on that land, they will come, right? It's this field of dreams mentality of, you don't need marketing. You don't need to pay for that stuff. I just need to get the business aspect right. And I think today, and you'll know this just as much as the next seasoned marketer, that brand does matter. In a sea of 20 plus national home builders and Taylor Morrison being in the top five, when there's a fork in the road between two brands and two home builders, when the land is essentially the same, the product is essentially the same, how do you get them to turn into the Taylor Morrison community?
So let me pause you on that for just a second, which is a point that all of us as marketers are constantly trying to drive to the brands that we work with, whether you're a CMO at a large organization or a small organization, or you're an agency and you're trying to help build a brand. I've always found that aspect interesting, which is, again, whether you're Taylor Morrison or one of the other large home builders, it seems like, I'm 51 right now, my club age is 47. So I've been around for a little while, right? And it's the most expensive purchase you'll ever make. You look at Ford, you look at Toyota, you look at Hyundai. I mean, look at a brand like Hyundai that has completely changed their brand perception from cheap little car that will get you from point A to point B to, you know, right up there with the big boys. How did they do that? They invested in the brand. They built marketing. They created a perception, real or slightly imagined, of value, or at least trust. And so that's what I have found so interesting about Taylor Morrison, especially within the last 3 or 4 years since your time there, is they have invested in that. They have invested in their communities. Your CEO is extremely active, not only in ensuring that Taylor Morrison as a brand means something, but I also saw a lot about where Taylor Morrison is investing back in communities, realizing, where does this land come from? And a lot of times the land is coming from undeveloped opportunities or certain situations where maybe the housing value was less. And so you're trying to bring value to the neighborhood. At the same time, how do you take care of those who've been in neighborhoods for so long? So I've found that to be pretty interesting. Before I dig into that, before we super really dig into Taylor Morrison, let's talk about you for just a second. You grew up in Arizona, correct?
Born and raised, a true zony, yes.
A true zony. And so you went to college there, your mom and dad were there. I forget what you said your mom and dad did. I know we've previously talked about that, but talk about your parents for just a second.
Sure. My mother was a registered nurse. She was a nurse in the operating room for over 35 years. And my dad owned his own subcontractor. So he did asbestos removal. He was a skilled laborer. So I kind of grew up, you know, with the hard hats and the bunny suits and running around dirt. And I'm thinking that was really interesting. So when I go on job sites in jeans and tennis shoes and my hair in a ponytail and a hard hat, I feel at home and I feel very comfortable. So it was a nice industry shift. I was in higher education right before I came into construction. And yeah, I've always felt at home at Taylor Morrison.
Did you feel like that was destiny to some extent, that you had been around home building to some extent with your dad? Is he still with us?
No, you know, Sean, I've lost both my parents.
Okay.
And, you know, I lost my father when I was in my early 20s. And I credit that early tragedy really to part of my success. I threw myself into my career as like a coping mechanism for better or worse. I guess probably one of the more healthy coping mechanisms. And I think part of that came from watching his work ethic. Right. So it made me feel safe. It made me feel productive. But I had wonderful parents who showed a lot of love and emotion, and very grateful for that.
You know, we all, it's funny, I have twin 17-year-olds. I don't remember. Do you and your husband have kids?
We do. We have a almost 6-year-old daughter named Hazel. My son Wesley is 3, and I'm 37 weeks pregnant with my third. Oh,
wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So I have, as I said, I have twin 17-year-olds. Just wait till yours are teenagers. It's amazing sometimes when they get to that age, they're so independent, which you'll find. You start seeing even more of your professional self in them as they get to this age, as they create this level of independence. It's a blessing and a curse. And so I'm sure, again, in some ways, I then look back to the time of my father and what skills did my father pass along with me that, of course, I told him at the time, I'm not like you. I'm completely different than you. And now I'm out there selling and always constantly talking about just what a great and amazing seller he was. And so I'm sure there's this sense when you put your hair up and you put your boots on and you're out there of feeling like you're walking kind of on this hallowed ground of these steps that your father had taken in many ways.
For sure. A quick story at the beginning of COVID when we were all at home and my husband is in web development. And so he does some contract work, but he's largely at home with our kids. My daughter and my son were in the backyard playing house, and my 5-year-old daughter, maybe 4 at the time, put a Trader Joe's bag over her shoulder and told my son, "You stay here. I'm the mom. I'm going to work." You know, and she got all ready and she was so proud of, "I'm going to the office. I have stuff to do. I have a busy day," and telling my son, "You're going to stay home," which I looked at my husband. I'm like, we're looking at each other and he's like, "Rock on." He wants his daughter to see that empowerment and know that.
Sure.
Can stay home. She can go to work. She can really do whatever she wants. So, I mean, I know she's 4 or 5 years old, but it's fun to see that manifest already at such a young age.
It is amazing what our kids do, if you have them, to change your life. If you don't, you also have some blessings in all of the stress that it sometimes creates as well. But that's always interesting you don't realize sometimes what your kids are kind of picking up in the background. And so to hear her say that, that's pretty amazing. You grew up in Arizona.
Yes.
And then, as you said, you got a degree in communications, and that was kind of your path that you thought you were initially on?
Yeah. So my degree's in journalism. At a very young age, my mother was like, she's either going to be a lawyer, she asks so many questions, or she'll be a journalist because she asks so many questions. I've always had this, I don't want to say nosiness, but curiosity about everything. And I love to tell stories. At a young age, I was good at making up some of those stories. Those became more grounded in facts the older I got. I just wanted to tell stories. I think when I was in my early 20s, it was more focused on being a print reporter and journalist and finding those great stories to tell. Realizing at an early age, it was kind of a dying industry. Did a couple of internships where I really learned a little bit more about the kind of stories I wanted to tell. And then I woke up, I swear, 4 or 5 years later in-house, working for large corporations, helping executives who can't find the right words, tell the stories of their company's growth or strategic plans to thousands of employees. You know, my first, I call it big girl job, was at a semiconductor, a global semiconductor with 30,000 employees. And we were going through M&A and divestitures. And I got really thrown into this corporate environment. And whether it be being naive, I saw these executives as people who had a need, and they couldn't quite grasp how to connect with employees and to tell the right story. And so I filled that void.
That was at ON Semiconductor, correct?
That was at ON Semiconductor.
Were they based in Arizona, or were they somewhere else at the time?
Headquartered in Phoenix.
Okay.
So I've always found myself at headquarters here in Phoenix. It's very large global companies. But at a young age, they always say, what's the line? It's, experience is wasted on the youth. I was traveling to the Czech Republic and to Belgium and doing all these wonderful trips to help bring employees along. And now, fast forward 15 plus years, and now in a more, consumer marketing role, I truly believe that it has to start inside, that your employees have to live it and breathe it and believe it before you can push any of those elements of the story into the public. It can't go backwards. And I remember having this moment right after I was in the CMO seat and I had that title. And I think I was at a CMO conference in Laguna, in California. I think it might have been the Forbes conference. Feeling a little of the imposter syndrome, because I'm like, I'm sitting in a room with CMOs who've been doing this for decades. And a lot of them were talking about company culture and employees. All of a sudden, they had to care about employee and internal marketing. And they had questions and they weren't really sure how to do that. And I'm like, hey, I've been doing that for 15 years. I have something you don't have. And I really understand the heartbeat of an organization being its team members and its employees and how to do that, which sets up, you know, the external part of it for success. And to be honest, without, you know, trying to degrade our industry, I love what we do. Telling the public what you do is the easy part.
You brought up a really great point. And that point is the importance of communication. One of the interesting things about the show is we get to see, again, the history of where a lot of CMOs have come from. There isn't one path like I came from here. And so therefore CMO is the next step. You came from a communications background. And so in many ways, it's that background, especially right now, to your point, that helps start the story. Good sellers can sell, but it is so much easier to sell when you believe in the product yourself, right? Because then you're coming from a place of authenticity. And if you're coming from a place of authenticity of knowing, what are we really bringing of value here? Well, that sets up everything else. That allows all the rest of your marketing channels to make sense. It's nice to have a beautiful glossy picture, a really great commercial showing the inside of what a home is, but it's different. And again, I feel like maybe some of what came from COVID is this need for authenticity, this need of like, look, let me cut through the bullshit. I'm ready to move. I need something different in my life. Why this community, maybe even more so than this house?
Yeah, how are you going to support me in that life move, in that big transition? You brought it up earlier. There isn't a more emotional purchase. I mean, we really have this product that people pour their whole lives, their life savings, they're going to raise their families, they're going to create memories. And it's all centered in this, you know, this box, right? That they're going to bring their babies home to. And, you know, there are builders out there that I think don't understand the responsibility of that. Certainly we've got salespeople and there are good ones and bad ones. I'd say most of ours, they believe in the brand, you know, and we're a hodgepodge of multiple acquisitions, right? If I look at, I've been at Taylor Morrison now 6 years tomorrow through 7-8 acquisitions in that time.
I believe I saw that the company itself is actually over 100 years old. It started over in England in essence and combined and acquired and did other parts or pieces. And it's a legacy brand to some extent, which is again, pretty crazy to kind of think of.
And we have since then absolutely acquired other wonderful regional builders that in and of themselves have their own rich legacies. And so we try to honor all of those while creating something new that consumers can relate to, our team members can speak to, and we can really go out into the market with a different product and a different brand message. And, you know, another thing I think COVID provided us as a marketing organization is we are not hungry in any way for leads, right? We have more people hoping to get into a home right now than we could even imagine, which to your point, you recognize in the last 4 years, we've really put a lot of energy and intentionality into building a brand and building a brand that's different from our competition. And so right now, you know, I've got the field saying, turn it off. We don't need any more leads. We don't need any more people. We can't even serve the people that we have. We're fully in brand awareness right now in brand building, which it's nice to not have to worry about, am I bringing enough leads? Am I serving our sales function appropriately? Because we know we're doing that. We can really focus on long-term future-proofing the industry and spending time, you know, creating and failing and experimenting. And that's a really fun place to be.
You know, a lot of companies, again, have come out of this crazy dip with strength. But to your point, you know, several of our clients, especially in the retail sector, we've got a big furniture client. They've turned off some of their paid stuff, but, you know, they're now fully invested in how do we build this brand bulletproof? Because we know it's not going to be forever. So how do we make sure that we don't screw up people's orders, that we build that recognition? You know, I remember a big boom. Again, I'm a little older. I remember a boom. Maybe it was 15 years ago, maybe a little longer, where same kind of thing. You just, houses couldn't go up fast enough. And you'd see these builders and they're kind of throwing them together. And then 2 years later, they're starting to fall apart. And you just think, wow, you've wrecked your brand. Yeah, maybe you were able to sell an extra 5 houses, but now you're not gonna be able to sell these 10 that you just built. And again, your business is so unique and so interesting in that you are always building for the future. Whenever the economy makes a shift, hopefully it's not for a very long time, but when it does, you have to be adjusted 12 months ahead of being able to create some of that prediction. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about your CEO for just a second. She's a pretty amazing person. She's accomplished quite a lot out there. And so how does that feel? Because she is one of the only female executives, I believe, that is running an organization this large in the home space.
She is. She's the only female CEO in the public home building space. And my first interview with her was very similar to some of the past interviews I've had, where she was on a mission to grow and to create something that hadn't been created. And she knew she had this great story to tell. She just wasn't sure how to do it and where to start. So I remember our first interview lasting a little over 2 hours and both of us crying, just talking about just the power of storytelling and what it can mean and the difference it can make in the lives of, you know, all of your stakeholders. So it was like an instant love at first sight with Cheryl between the two of us. And I feel like we have a bond and understanding around tonality and who we want to be. She's a phenomenal leader, mentor. You know, I think starting at Taylor Morrison, I had just turned 30. I was 6 months pregnant with my first. Not many are making a giant leap into a new organization, into an executive role at that juncture, right? Knowing I was like, hey, I'm going to come in for 90 days and then leave for 90 days. I mean, she was so supportive, and she has now been through all of my children. And she has said she is our brand. She has a warmth and an authenticity and a desire to do good and stand for something a lot bigger than just our wonderful product. Building a quality home, Sean, is like price of entry, right? So consumers expect that you're doing a great job at building what you're selling, but it's the message and the meaning behind it. And I think we have the opportunity to relate and mean more. And during COVID, when everyone was so worried about, and I think this will be a stickiness factor of COVID, you know, the airlines were coming on CNBC talking about the filtration and it's safer in the air than anywhere else. And we were the first builder in July of last year to offer all of these new options and upgrades within your home standard. We call it our TM LiveWell package. And it's the paint, it's the filtration, it's the water filtration. It's, you should be able to come into a home and feel safe.
Feel healthy.
Our CEO, Cheryl, was committed. I don't care how upset our senior operators get at trying to figure this out. It's the right thing to do for our customers, and we're going to be the first to do it.
Yeah, her name is Cheryl Palmer. She was recognized recently with the 2021 Hearthstone Builder Humanitarian Award, again, for a lot of what you guys do in your communities as well. With the time we've got left, let's talk a little bit about just that, about the future of the brand. How are you making those adjustments? How are you bulletproofing for the future? What's that vision look like from your perspective?
Such a great question. And it's what it gets me out of bed and keeps me up late at night. I'm so excited about it. You know, before COVID, we had put together this digital roadmap. I'd say home building is one of the most antiquated industries. We're still out there swinging hammers, and you've got to get a lot of trades on site. You know, there are some improvements in building sciences. Those take a long time to prove out. So what else is shifting? I think you look at the automotive industry, you look at Amazon, you look at how that's changed consumer behavior and consumer preference. People want things delivered. They want to be able to do it online. And for so long, if you look at new home construction, even just our website presence, it was used purely as a seduction tool, right? Show some pretty pictures and get them into the community, right? Get their butts into a community so our salespeople can sell them. And consumers don't have time or patience or any interest in that. They want to go online, they want to research, they want to know pricing, they want to know everything about that house, from the color of the paint to the appliances on the inside. They want square footage, a bedroom, so they can plan. And so we, 3 years ago said, we're going to do this. We're going to be one of the first. We're going to create, our website's going to be transactional. We want to play in the e-commerce space, and we want to be fully transparent. We want consumers to know everything there is to know about personalizing and building a new home. So with COVID, that roadmap, that dream board of getting a lot of this online was accelerated. So very quickly, I mean, just the idea and notion, Sean, of being able to book a direct appointment online with a sales associate didn't exist until COVID.
That's crazy to think of again.
Which
just
is crazy. You can go book an appointment online to get your oil changed or do anything. And in home building, you know, you had to call someone and play phone tag to just get an appointment scheduled. So we went way more direct to consumer, just on appointments. We offer technology on our inventory homes now that allows you to enter the home without a salesperson, right? It's more of a no pressure. In COVID, it was a safer way to explore and tour a home. And now we've stood up technology that allows you to essentially configure your dream home. You pick the dirt lot, you pick your floor plan, you pick your elevation, and you reserve it. I mean, you get to actually take all the steps that you would in a sales center with a sales associate, and you can do it all online. And that is the future. You know, it's a little bit different than, you know, assembling a Tesla, because Sean, you could put a beautiful Tesla together online.
I have my Tesla. It is beautiful, but yes.
Do you? I haven't gotten there yet, but my husband is, you know, pushing
they're,
me.
They're amazing. We could spend a half an hour talking about that.
Yeah.
But to your point, consumers want to control.
They do. They want to be in control. And I think in our industry, they come into our sales center and they're powerless, right? They don't know. They don't have information. Unless they built a few homes and they're kind of a veteran in the space, it's a complicated process and you feel powerless. So we want to put the power and the control in the consumer's hand and make it simple. You can simplify it. It doesn't have to be complicated. And it can be, it's exciting. It's supposed to be. But there's a difference. It hasn't been done before yet, Sean, because it's not easy. If you want to buy a home on lot one and I want to buy a home on lot two, the choices you select impact me, right? And in every community, there's different municipality rules, there's monotony rules. You can't have the same floor plan with the same elevation and exterior package as your neighbor. And that's a good thing. We want to control the you know, the architecture and the look and feel of these communities. So the technology has to be really smart. It has to have logic and rules. And
to me, it's really amazing to see how much technology seems to be moving extremely quickly. It can't, again, even just from the COVID element of so many companies having to say, whatever our plan was before, we have to design a new plan. It has to fit within the ability for people to be mobile, for people to decide that they want to, you know, be able to do things at their own time, at their own pace. And for me, you know, one of the most interesting things about this season as we start to wrap this episode has been, you know, we try to make sure that we mix a lot of female CMOs along with a lot of male CMOs. And so again, that you get this season full of all these different voices. I didn't kind of realize it at the time, but we kicked off the season with Janine, who's the CMO at Guitar Center. That's a fairly male-centric industry to some extent. Later in the season, we had Shachar Scott, who's the CMO at Bumble, and talk about a piece of technology that's completely changed the dating game. It's empowered women to be able to say, this is kind of how I want to date online. And then we had one of my favorite guests this season. It was Tammy Powers, who has her own company, Power Drive, that works in the racing industry, which is so male-centric. And so it's a beauty and a blessing to be able to kind of end this season with you, Stephanie McCarty, Chief Marketing Officer, Taylor Morrison, which to your point is a very male-centric industry sometimes to some extent. So I'm going to end with this question. If your dad was still here, how do you think he would feel? What do you think he would maybe say to you as advice as you continue your career?
It's a great question. I think about it often. I think he would be proud, obviously. I do think he'd be humbled that I stayed close to his world. I oftentimes speak to him, you know, and ask him questions about how he would approach certain situations. I'm a very trusting and welcoming person. I don't like to use the term gender blind, or, you know, I don't look at age or sex as any kind of barrier. I feel at home. And I do think so much of that too goes to Taylor Morrison and the culture we've built. I'm also the youngest executive at the table. And so it was scary coming in. And I think not having my dad to kind of boost that confidence or help me, which I also thank Cheryl for. Because to build homes for every generation and every identity and every gender and every ethnicity, you need that around the table. And women bring something different. And if you think about it, I don't know how many men would admit it, but women are the vetoes and the yeses when it comes to a home purchase. So we are speaking to women all day, every day. And that touch on whether it be design or marketing is important. And we've got 80 million millennials coming into the home buying, their home buying years. And so being able to communicate with them, and this isn't, you know, going against all the wonderful boomers who are still out there buying and plan on, you know, it all relates. So I think he'd be proud. I think he would tell me to go get him and keep it up. And that tenacity that I have, that just fuels me. I know I got from him. So I'm very thankful because it's definitely, it's gotten me this far.
Both of your parents clearly spent some time raising you the right way. And again, the beauty of some of this is you're taking much of what you learned from both of your parents. And now you're passing it on to a whole new generation that isn't just your kids. Now it's kids all over the country with what you're doing there at Taylor Morrison. So Stephanie McCarty, first of all, I want to say thank you very much for making your time available. And thank you for helping us wrap this season of the CMO Suite. Continue to listen all summer long. We'll continue to run episodes and then we'll start back up in the fall. I want to thank all of you who've listened this season to all of our amazing guests. And thank you again for being part of the season.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnects provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnects today for a free demo. Uconnects, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.